Today on a special Rambling About Cars, the 2023 New York International Auto Show opens April 7th. But if you are a Rambling About Cars listener, you're getting a sneak preview right now because we've got people on the ground. We've got all the debuts, everything happening. Jeep, Subaru, Kia, Genesis, Ram. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. So let's roll. It's podcast time. I needed to take a breath there. I'm Christopher Smith, and across the way, Mr. Chris Bruce, co-host. Hey, and we are not alone.
We are not, we are not alone, but as we were getting set up for the show, you were drinking the energy drink Bang, and it clearly, the Bang kicked in as you've introduced the show.
It kicks in.
You went from low energy to high energy in like 20 seconds.
You know, I think I was one of the few fans of the reborn G4. RIP G4 died twice, but they were, I got the Bang thing from them, and I hate to say it, but it works. It really does. You could be up for a week and a half. Not that I recommend that, but it works. Well, it's been a long week, as I'm sure our special guest can attest.
Yes. So our guest this week is Anthony Alanese. He is kind of the third pill. Well, no, I that's mitigating Angle and Adrian. But you are the third member of the U.S.-based news team,
right,
along with Smith and I. So you're the third pillar in that way. You've been on the show before, obviously people know you, but so I appreciate you coming back, but go ahead. We're going to talk a little bit, introduce yourself.
Yeah. What you been up to, man?
What have you been up to? Have you bought any new cars? Anything interesting?
No, nothing new, in the garage at all. Just, keeping busy, and it's great to be back. It's always fun.
Oh, what's always in your garage, by the way? I don't think I've ever asked you that.
I got a 2013 Mustang.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, another Mustang guy.
Yep. I graduated college. So
cool.
We can do that. And Motor One US news team right here, ready to go. We're live. We're giving some people a chance to jump into the show here, to the podcast. We see we got some viewers checking in now. Yep. Since we are live, here's another reminder: wherever you're watching us, whether it's on Motor One's YouTube page, Twitter, Facebook, you are part of the show. You can comment real time as we're doing the show. We'll see the comments. They all come into us. We can broadcast them. We can share them. So you're along on this crazy ride with us. We're talking New York Auto Show. If you go to motorone.com, we have all kinds of debut posts of the things that have already debuted there. Guys, do we have anything else that's, I think, slated for tomorrow? I don't think so. I think today was pretty much
today was the day.
Of the debuts, right?
Yeah, today was the day, at least to my knowledge. Let me also put it this way. In our Trello, I don't know that there are any embargoes for tomorrow. So if something debuts, it's a surprise to us.
Right. Well, right? And hey, I mean, it's an auto show. There are always surprises. One of the things that we always try to grapple with as the news team, okay, here's what we know what's coming. Now we need to try to make sure we stack away some time for the things that we aren't expecting. And I mean, we had some of those today. We'll get to some of those here in a little bit. But guys, are you ready? Do you guys want to talk about everything that's going on with New York?
Yeah. Let's get the show on the road. We are going to start off with the 2024 Jeep. The 2024 the 2024 Jeep Wrangler, it receives a refresh. I'm going to throw some photos up now. Smith, you wrote the story. I'm pretty familiar with it, though, as well.
I did. It's one of the reasons why I'm drinking an energy drink, because we got the embargoed information, and it was like 10 o'clock last night. It's like, we need to get this wrapped up. So I just sat down and went for it. I mean, did either of you know Jeep was planning a refresh for 2024?
Absolutely not. I was going to mention that. We had no spy shots about this. We had no teasers about this. Like, they just kind of, the Jeep folks just kind of pushed it out there. And it's not even like on the outside, it's a minor refresh, but the interior gets a pretty major update.
Well, I mean, this is one of those cases where, and I think I even mentioned this in the article, it's the changes are minor. You've got a new grill on the outside. Yes. And inside, I mean, you have a larger infotainment screen that required relocating some of the air conditioning vents. I mean, those are the crux of the changes, but those two features, minor as they sound, I think make a pretty big difference overall on how it looks. Mm-hmm. And I'll start there because the first thing people will notice, it has a new grill. It's still the 7-bar traditional Jeep grill. I mean, that's never going to go away. But in this instance, it's much thinner. And that's done, aside from styling differences, to make room for a 8,000-pound worn winch that you can now get from the factory installed on the front of the Wrangler. On the Rubicon. And I mean, we're looking at photos right now. I've heard a few references to it looking sort of like a Renegade.
I don't think so.
I don't know where I fall on that. Well, let's take a minute to discuss that, because I was browsing through some of Jeep's socials today just to see what people were saying. And guys, I didn't see one single positive comment, and I bet I went through a couple hundred comments through Instagram, through Facebook, through posts there. Granted, a couple hundred social media comments, that's not a really good frame of reference, but it does give you some idea as to what the general flavor is. And it seems like people aren't really happy about this.
Are they saying why?
I don't know how you get upset about something being black rather than body color, especially when I guess if I were Jeep and I saw a bunch of complaints, I would just launch a bunch of special edition Wranglers with body color grills, and I would.
Well, they're already going to do that. And Anthony, I didn't really see any particular reason other than people were just, thumbs down emojis. Not really digging the new style. I did see more than a few references to saying, hey, you're making a new Renegade. But I mean, just a lot of ill feelings here for the look.
I don't get it, but okay. People are entitled to their opinion, but
Anthony, what's your take?
I'm looking at an old one, or the previous one. And I mean, it looks different. Yeah. But I think it has to do with like the that it's black and prominently discolored that I think makes it stand out, which might be drawing people's attention to it.
Sure.
But I don't think the design behind that color is actually that different, if that makes.
No, it makes total sense. I don't think it's, I think the slats are maybe a touch thinner, but I think if you made it body color and you put them side by side, I honestly wonder if anyone would notice.
Well, I mean, there are some trims where the grill, I think, is a different color. I mentioned it in my article. I don't have it right in front of me. For the most part, you're going to see it with the black grill with the black slats in there. But I was just kind of surprised at what seemed like really quick condemnation for this refresh. I mean, it's literally not even 24 hours old at this point. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that seems to be the initial reaction on the outside. Inside, I've seen it mixed. The interior, it's still generally the same interior. But like I said, that center screen now is 12.3 inches, and that's standard issue from the bottom to the top. Mm-hmm. Whatever trim level you get, you're getting the bigger 12.3 inch screen. To do that, they had to get rid of the circular shaped aircon vents in the middle. Like I said, there are little sort of just rectangular thin vents that are now underneath it. But because you're going with a larger screen, it does make, like I said, it's a relatively small change that has a fairly large impact on how it looks. And then, I mean, behind the scenes on all of that, you get Uconnect 5. So, I mean, there's a fairly substantial tech upgrade in here. It's coming with an off-road trails guide. I'm not an off-roader, so forgive me if I mess up some of the terminology here. But it's the first time this is actually offered. Has a factory package, and it's basically an off-road trails guide for some of the more prominent off-roading sites around the country. I mean, Rubicon is in there. Hell's Gate from Moab is in there. It comes with a certain number of trails in this guide. And I mean, it's a case where, okay, you pull up the trail guide. It gives you waypoints on the trail. It gives you points of interest along the trail. I mean, it's like off-road navigation, right? Only with a little bit extra included. And you can get up to, I think, 3,000 specific trails in this trail guide for with an upgraded system. So they're definitely going for some off-road chops here, little bit extra. What else we got?
They're also introducing a more kind of luxurious Rubicon package. They're calling that the Rubicon X. So that gets you 12-way power front seats, a 9-speaker stereo, Napa leather seats, which is funny on a vehicle that you're supposed to be taking off road, that you have these super soft, luxurious leather seats.
I caught that and then too. It's like
covered in mud.
It's like, yeah, 12-way Napa leather with like the gazillion speaker stereo system.
They'll sell a ton of them.
They will.
Oh, I bet they will.
They
and
will.
Then the other thing that the Rubicon is getting are Dana 44 HD full float axles in the back.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just about to say that.
Yeah. It's basically a harder core axle in the back to just, you know, take all the punishment if you're going off road. Mm-hmm.
There is another special, or not a special edition, but just a new trim level. The Sport S 4xe. So you're getting a hybrid, the plug-in hybrid model on a slightly lower trim level. Still, it's got 20-inch wheels. And all the 4xe models come with this little power box feature. It's basically a removable power box with 420-volt plugins that you can use for just mobile power on the go, wherever you might need it. They don't have any pricing yet for the new 2024 Wrangler. That's going to come a little bit later on this year. But I mean, powertrain, everything else is the same underneath. That's the 2 liter. That's the 2 liter engine, the 3.6 liter V6, of course, the hybrid 2 liter with the electric motor. And you still get the 392 with the 6.4 liter Hemi for at least one more year. It was curious though, in this press release, Jeep said that after 2025, its entire lineup would be electrified. So, I mean, we were discussing a little bit exactly what that meant in our team's chat. When you just take it straight as what they say, everything in the Jeep lineup will be electrified. I don't know if that means everything will be plug-in hybrid or maybe a mild hybrid system. Jeep hasn't specified that.
They can fudge what electrified means.
Yes, they can.
So, you know, it could be, I know Stellantis and their other vehicles, they have the 48 volt hybrid, mild hybrid system. So I wouldn't be too shocked if some of what they mean there are mild hybrids, but we'll have to wait and see, certainly. But it basically means that, if you want a Wrangler with the Hemi, those days are, you don't have too much time left to get one.
Right. Right. I would agree. Anthony, what are you thinking on this Jeep? I know we talked about it a little bit, how it just kind of came as a surprise. What's standing out for you with this new 2024 model?
I mean, I like the update. I think it looks nice. I think it's a nice update. You know, is it needed right now? You know, looking at, I think what the Wrangler is outselling the Bronco at the moment.
Not by much, though.
It's not, but for being what came out in 2017, for being a significantly older vehicle to outsell the new Bronco, I think does say something about the Wrangler in this segment.
Here's a question that I'll pose to you, and for everybody listening out there, chime in with your comments on this too, because I'm curious. I'd like to get a little bit broader feedback here. Would we see a 2024 Jeep Wrangler update if the Bronco hadn't launched in 2020? Because I was thinking about that too as I was writing this last night. Of course, we have Q1 2023 sales figures that were released this week, and I did look at them, and I think Jeep was somewhere around 38,000 Wranglers versus 32,000 for Bronco. So the gap is getting closer. Do you think Jeep might be feeling a little bit of pressure here to bring out this update?
Yes and no, in my opinion. I think this update was planned because, like Anthony said, this is an older-ish vehicle. This is the right time that you would do a refresh. But also, Smith, you and I have talked about this before, where the Wrangler 392, didn't they tease it like on purpose, like 6 hours before the Bronco Raptor debuted? Like, they know exactly.
Yeah,
what's going on. They know who their competitors are. And so I just wonder if it means, you know, that there's more to come, that every time Bronco does something, that there's someone at Wrangler who's like, we got to do better than that, or vice versa.
It'll be an interesting back and forth and see what, you know, in a few years, what Ford responds with updating the Bronco, because that will need, I mean, that'll need to be some sort of electrification here probably in a few years, and other changes coming to it. So, I mean,
how the past how will... few years, we're already getting up to a Bronco refresh.
Pretty close, probably 2 years out.
A couple years, probably. I mean, if you go by the regular schedule,
You know, and, you know, what will that look like? Will that be electrified, hybrid?
I mean, you know, Ford has a lot of hybrids. They could even go plug-in hybrid if they wanted to. You know, not that we know anything. I'm kind of talking here, but you certainly couldn't rule it out.
I mean, either way you look at it, the segment is getting very, very competitive. And for the first time in a very, very long time, Jeep actually has some very strong competition now. So interesting refresh. A little surprised to see that a lot of the feedback through social, at least, has been negative. Ramblers out there, you can comment live as we're doing this, but don't forget, we're also available on all major streaming platforms for audio. You can always go back and catch the rebroadcast of the show anytime you want on Motor One YouTube channel, and email us podcast@motorone.com, especially talking about the Jeep here, kind of the Jeep Bronco dynamic. I think that's a pretty interesting kind of comparison to consider there. But Jeep is just one of many vehicles that are gracing New York right now. What else we got, Bruce?
So in February, right around the time of the Super Bowl, Ram showed off kind of the first official information, the first kind of sort of spec, stuff like that, about the 1500 REV, which is what we're calling it, REV. But at the New York Auto Show, they dropped a ton of specs. Basic everything that we could want to know. Well, maybe not everything, but a lot of what we would want to know about this truck. And I apologize to any listeners. I to get through all of this information in a timely manner, I feel bad because I'm basically going to be throwing numbers.
We're going to have to go kind of quick.
But all of these numbers are also important, so it's difficult. But
let's go.
Yes. So Ram 1500 REV, or Ram 15. I like calling it the 1500 REV.
I think it's going to be called the REV.
But anyway, 654 horsepower, 620 pound-feet of torque. Gets to 60 miles per hour in 4.4 seconds. It can tow, and this is going to depend on specification, which I will be getting to in just a moment. It can tow up to 14,000 pounds, and it has a payload capacity of 2,700 pounds. It can also go through up to 24 inches of water. And the reason that I had to put those caveats before is that, so the standard battery is 168 kilowatt hours, which for anyone out there who maybe is not super familiar with EVs, 168 kilowatt hours is a lot. That's a healthy amount. Yes. And there is an optional 229 kilowatt hour battery. So if you get the smaller, the standard, the 168 kilowatt hour battery, Ram is projecting that that will do 350 miles on a charge. The larger 229 kilowatt hour battery, they're projecting that to do 500 miles on a charge. And again, these are still projections. You know, we don't know some very specific numbers yet. Those are just the numbers that Ram are giving us.
I think it's worth just pausing there for a moment, Bruce, because those are some significant numbers. Those are some big, big numbers.
Yes.
In what's going to be a very big, presumably lucrative segment. I feel like Ram, they're trying to come out swinging with both fists with their 1500 REV. If you notice, they're talking about how much water it can go through. They're talking about payload capacity. They're talking about towing capacity right off the bat. Those are all big truck things.
Totally. It can recharge. It supports 800 volt DC, and that means it can recharge at up to 350 kilowatts, assuming you go to a station that can actually support that. If that station is supporting that, you can get 110 miles of range back in 10 minutes. So that's pretty significant. Also, it has, and I got to count these off, it has vehicle to vehicle, vehicle to home, and vehicle to grid charging. So that means, say you've got a buddy with another EV, you can plug them up together. Say you have a house and it is appropriately set up, because not all houses are, you know, they take special equipment, but assuming your house is set up for that, you can plug into your house. Also, grid, same thing. Not everyone is set up for that, but some are. That 7.2 kilowatts you can hook up from the bed, and there's an optional 3.6 kilowatt hookup underneath the frunk. And I spoke to I spoke to Ram about this, and you can use both of those simultaneously if needed. So, you know, just basically, if you're out camping, you're out tailgating, you're, you know, power goes out in your house, you can plug in a lot of stuff into this vehicle, which is kind of a big thing, because that's something that we've seen Ford talk about a lot with their F-150 Lightning.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, and oh. I was just going to say, I mean, we've talked more than a few times about whether or not Ram is making a mistake coming later to the party, or if they're playing it smart. I think this is an instance where it seems like they're playing it smart.
It seems like they looked at what their competitors did and they decided we have to do that and maybe even do more.
And the market is still, I mean, the segment is still really in its infancy. Yes. When this truck comes to market, I mean, the Silverado EV should be out there pretty fresh. Ford is working on its new electric truck that is not an F series that I think is going to be more in this range. So, I mean, yeah, it's, The more I see this, the more I feel like, okay, maybe Ram is doing it right here. Maybe they're making the smart move.
So moving inside, you get a 12.3 inch digital info or digital dig. Let me restart. 12.3 inch digital instrument cluster. The standard infotainment screen is also going to be 12 inches. But you can upgrade to a 14.5 inch system there, and there's an optional 10.25 inch display for the passengers. So just displays abound depending on what you want. There's also an optional 10 inch head up display. And we were talking about this in our Slack chat. We think this might be the first Stellantis vehicle. We're not sure if Dodge might beat them, but this might be the first one that is going to have a hands-free driver assist system. So we're talking like Ford Blue Cruise, GM Smart Cruise, sort of Tesla full self-driving, like that type of system where theoretically you can take your hands off the wheel and the vehicle will go down the road. Dodge has talked about offering that. They've teased that. And we don't know enough about the release cadence yet to say this is going to be the first one, but Ram says it's going to have that kind of tech. And so this is probably going to be among the first ones that are have that.
You're right, Bruce. It is a lot to get through.
No, it's a ton, you know,
I think New York is a really good venue for this. And again, people have heard me complain in the past about, okay, automakers, if you're going to debut something, debut it, put it out there, tell us all about it. Don't kind of break it up. This might be a case where it's okay to break it up a little bit, because we're getting a truck that has a lot of conventional styling, but still looks more towards the electric realm. Right. And now we're getting just kind of fed this data. And it is a lot to take in.
Right. And they just dumped the specs out. They're like, you've seen the truck. We don't have to play with New York. Looks like.
Going to New York. Here you go.
Right. Here are all the specs you could want. And I mean, so that's what they did.
They look good. It's, you know, can they deliver on it? And they're making big promises. And what's the real world going to be like with those like, towing figures and whatnot? But to make a splash, that's a good start.
Yeah, that's the question with basically every vehicle launch in its own sort of way. I remember years and years ago, I had a conversation with our boss, Seth, basically being about, you know, how much do you trust automakers when they announce stuff? And, you know, an established automaker like Ram or something like that, you lend a little bit more trust to. And if you're a newcomer into the game, if you're a startup, maybe you take things with a little bit of a grain of salt. But still, you can't know. Like, we've definitely seen the opposite as well, where an automaker promises something and it doesn't quite deliver. But, you know,
we've also seen a lot of under delivering or under promising and then over delivering.
Yeah, we have. So we just have to kind of wait and see.
And this is right. I mean, and this is considered a 2025 model. So we still have a little bit of time before it comes to market. But definitely when you come out with stats like that, that's making a splash, even at a fairly substantial event like the 2023 New York Auto Show, which is what we're talking about today. If you're just catching us, the live rambling about cars on Motor One YouTube, Motor One Twitter, Motor One Facebook, we are talking about the 2023 New York Auto Show that opens to the public on April 7th. We have a preview right now. We have people on the ground. And if you go to MotorOne.com, once our podcast is done, we want you to stick around for the podcast because
we kind of
know a thing or two here. Once the podcast is done, go over to MotorOne.com, especially with the Ram article. Bruce wrote up the Ram article. Lots of great information there. Anthony, I know you've got some articles out there too. Let's move on to
Subaru. Yep. And hey, I just want to put something, because we have our own little private chat where we can talk here. I am not 1,000% sure we are getting comments right now. So if you have been commenting, can you please throw another comment into our chat?
Or a thumbs up. Things are oddly quiet here, and we know we got some ramblers out there watching.
Yeah, we see that there are viewers, but there are oddly low number of comments. So if we're boring, I can accept that. But if there's a tech issue, I kind of need to know about it.
Yeah, tech issue, we'll fix it. If we're just boring, I mean, B-O-R-I-N-G, all caps, send that. We can work with that. I can have more energy drink. We can go crazy.
That's right. You're not going to hurt my feelings, but I just want to make sure there's not a tech issue.
Speaking of crazy, how about a new Wilderness model from Subaru? I don't know how crazy the Wilderness models get. They are a neat upgrade, though.
They are
a neat upgrade. And the Crosstrek is the latest Subaru to get the Wilderness upfit. This is the 2024 Subaru Crosstrek Wilderness. I had to pause there for a second. If you notice in the comments on YouTube before the show, I said we're taking bets on how many times I say Subaru Forester Wilderness instead of Crosstrek. I've been doing a lot of work on my Subaru Forester lately. So apologies if at any point during this segment I say Subaru Forester Wilderness. When I say Forester, I really mean Crosstrek.
And I got it real quick. Thanks to Grupa FBC, that test message, gents. Grupa, thanks for that. Apparently, we're just boring because no one's commenting with us tonight. But you know what? We're going to try to make this show more exciting, Dan.
We got the Subaru Wilderness Crosstrek SUV that's debuted at the New York Auto Show. We're going to talk about that right now.
Yes, we are.
It's not just an appearance package. Has with other Crosstrek models.
With other Wilderness models.
Has with other Wilderness. See, man, I was going to. Yeah, I'm all over the place here tonight with other Wilderness models. I mean, yeah, you do get like, you know, there's the skid plate up front. On this, there's a new grill.
Taller ride height. And you get the fender. Taller ride height.
Well, yeah, I was getting to that, Bruce. Jeez. Now you just messed up my mojo. Now I'm going to start calling it Forester again. Okay. Yes. 9.3 inches of ground clearance, and that comes through upgraded springs and shocks, which are a little bit taller. There's also more suspension articulation. comes on all terrain tires instead of street tires. You know, just nothing major, nothing extraordinary. But the Crosstrek, not Forester, is already pretty good as it is off-road. So these little extras added in, I'm betting this is going to be a pretty fun, pretty impressive little machine off-road. I mean, it certainly has the rugged exterior upfit with the copper
body cladding. Oh, or that
copper trim accent. On the roof rails, copper accents on the front and rear bumpers. It's got new front and rear bumpers. The body cladding is definitely, yeah. I don't know. I mean,
love it. It's over the top and. In my opinion, kind of ugly. I understand why it's there. You know, it protects. If that plastic body cladding is there, you're not going to get dents or things like that. You can go too far with that, though. And I think this is kind of teetering on the edge of being too far.
You know, the irony here is I just did a fair amount of paint correction on my older Forester. And I'm thinking about putting some fender flares on it. So as I'm sitting here looking at the Crosstrek, I'm like, nope, I'm just going to leave mine just the way it is, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a smart move.
But I mean, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. The Crosstrek definitely has its own look. Of course, it's new for this model year. So we're getting that added in with the Wilderness package. Underneath it all, it's still a 2.5 liter four cylinder, 182 horsepower, 176 pound feet of torque. Of course, it's all wheel drive. It has trick torque vectoring that'll get you through different areas. It has a new off-road mode. What is it here? I got to look at my notes. It's the same thing that all the Wilderness models get. X mode, where you've got snow and dirt mode. And then if it's really bad, I love it. You'd have deep snow and mud mode. And it has a gradient control, which is kind of a neat name just to say hill descent. Also, and I kind of want this just for the name. It does have a StarTex synthetic leather interior. I just want the StarTex interior. Right.
Yeah, that's Subaru's name for their, you know, their leatherette as kind of a common name, faux leather. You know,
it's StarTech.
That's right.
I think whoever came up with that name, they need to get a raise. I'm just gonna come right out and say it right there. StarTech synthetic leather. It's water resistant, and there are more bronze accents inside. I'm thinking maybe Jeep should get their StarTech interior instead of the Napa. This is water resistant.
So right? I got to call out our good buddy, Brett T. Evans. He wrote up the story for us and he compared the ground clearance to the new Crosstrek Wilderness to some of its main competitors. Ford Bronco Sport, 8.8 inches of ground clearance. Jeep Compass Trailhawk, 8.6 inches. And just as a reminder, this is 9.2 inches. So it's, you know, if you compare it to what it's competing against, and if for whatever reason you are in the market for a compact off-roader, but you don't want to buy, you know, a Jeep Wrangler or something like that, you want something a little bit more friendly on road, at least compared to the competitors, this is a good choice in terms of specs. Now, granted, I haven't driven, like I said, you know, I haven't driven them all, so I can't say that for certain, but looking at numbers on paper, it's competitive.
And it's worth pointing out too, it does have different front and rear bumpers, and Subaru says that does improve the approach and departure angles. I mean, I feel like they've done maybe a little bit more, at least on the marketing side, with the Crosstrek Wilderness. Of course, Crosstrek is, I believe, their best-selling vehicle. If I'm not mistaken.
I think you are mistaken. I'm gonna look it up right now.
Are you with me, Anthony? Because I want to say
it was 14,000 in the first 3 months of the year, compared to the Forester, which was at 10,000 and some change.
Okay, and really? Ascent and Ascent isn't quite there yet either.
Outback was 13 and some change.
Yeah. So I mean, this is a very popular vehicle for Subaru, and I feel like they're giving this at the very least on the marketing side, a little bit more of a push to say, hey, this isn't just a soft rotor with some bolt-on fender flares. We want you to feel like you can actually go out and do some things with this. And of course, the media photos that we have, I mean, it's going down rocky trails. It's going down dirt roads. I mean, it's doing kind of off-roady things. I mean, it's not climbing Moab.
Okay, wait, I was wrong. I'm sorry, I was wrong. You guys are right. Crosstrek sold 41,562 units for the year so far. The second below that is the Outback at 32,767, and that's through March of 2023. So, yeah.
And Mojillo, thank you for commenting. Says something wrong with the grill. Looks smaller, less masculine. I mean, it does have the update up front there. I'm not doubting the masculine comment. I'm just not really sure what the hell to call the styling on this, because it's so, I mean, especially with the extra off-road, you know, the wilderness features, it is so just kind of out there, you know, especially there's so many contrasting angles. It looks like a very, very busy design, compared to just the standard Crosstrek. But I mean, thanks for the comment for sure. It's something to think about. I've been so busy looking at the fender flares, those fender arches and some of the other accents that I guess I really wasn't paying much attention to the grill. So good on you to catch that. We're looking at it now. I guess I don't love it or hate it.
I don't love it. I don't hate it. It just kind of is, which, you know, maybe that's damning it with faint praise. I don't know.
Yeah. Hard to say, but
anyway,
that'll be available later this year. Right now it's time to move on. And again, if you're just tuning in on Motor One Facebook, Motor One Twitter, Motor One YouTube, we are rambling about cars and we are rambling about the 2023 New York Auto Show that starts this Friday, but we're giving you a preview right now because we're cool like that. And we're going to move on here to the Genesis GV80 Coupe Concept. Yes, we are.
And concept, we kind of have to put in quotes right now.
Well, we do have it confirmed that this is going into production.
That's what I mean. Is a concept, but a production version is coming.
And I think we managed to scoop that. Our man Brett was on the ground at New York and got the word from from the Genesis people that he was with it. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and put this into production. Keep it a secret. But then they were like, yeah, you don't have to keep it a secret. Just go. So we went. And what is it? Well, it's a Genesis GV80 with a sleeker roof and a different front fascia and a whole hell of a lot of orange. This thing is. And I asked our guys, that are on the ground in New York. We've got a senior editor, Brett Evans, and we've got senior editor Jeff Perez on the ground in New York. And I was asking Jeff, I was like, is this thing really orange or is it just like a really bright red that looks orange in photos? And he's like, no, dude, it's orange. it's like it is orange, which I think is pretty bold for Genesis. But I think this whole thing is pretty bold for Genesis. And here's why. First of all, I should say that we don't have statistics as far as what's under the hood, power, performance, right, anything like that. What we do know is, I mean, it's based on the GV80, which has a rear-wheel drive based platform. Mm-hmm. And this is a dedicated four-seater, but it's not. So you don't have three people that can sit in the back, not five. This is a dedicated four-seater, and not because they want you to stretch out with your reclining back seats, and sip champagne while you're zipping along the highway. These are four carbon fiber, rather heavily bolstered sport seats, front and rear. And then behind those rear seats is a big honking strut bar for extra support.
Which, and we should be clear, I highly doubt will be on the production version. And in fact, I hope
it is. Because their announcement on this, they're talking about how they want to they want to evoke more of a performance aura going forward. In fact, dude, let me pull up my article here. Just to see exactly,
because I think I got the quote here a second. I love the tweed pattern on the seats. It looks like a very nice men's sport coat from like late 80s, early 90s. It kind of has that look to it. It's handsome, but also vaguely retro.
Genesis says it's a statement of intent towards future models. So, right. I mean, we know that it's going into production, but in their announcement, I mean, they're also saying hints towards more emotional and performance oriented models. So
I think the four seats and the brace have to stay if that's their intent.
I mean,
we've already seen plenty of fast, you know, coupe like crossovers and SUVs before. If you're going to be different and stand out, we'll lean into it.
Yeah. Otherwise, buy a GV80. Just, you know what? I mean, just buy the regular GV80. Or I guess you could make like the optional driver's package, right? I'm just making that up completely. We don't have any information regarding the GV80 coupe other than it's going to go into production and it's got the four seats. But if you really wanted to be bold like that and say, okay, we are going to aim for a little bit more performance, where else are you going to find a coupe SUV like that, that can still carry four people, that can still carry stuff from the back, but has some notable handling chops. And I would expect, I mean, when you look at this, it doesn't even look like an SUV to me. I mean, obviously there's considerable resemblance to the GV80. I mean, it's still a GV80, but I see this more as just like a five door, you know, just a five door. Sure.
It looks like a tall hatch to me.
Yeah.
And kind of blurs that line like the Ioniq 5.
And it's not even that tall, really. I mean, when you look at it in profile, I mean, it's not slammed, but it's not. I mean, it's not tall. It's not tall.
Genesis is still a new brand.
Yes.
Realistically, if it's going to try and chart itself a new course, well, I mean, that's a statement. That looks nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's got the two bar light theme going across the front, going across the back.
Across the roof, side.
Across the side as well. The roof is black because black is cool, and also because it's carbon fiber. It goes back into, there are dual little wings at the back. There's one right at the top of the roof, just a little subtle little lip, and then like another little subtle sort of like a ducktail at the very back. We don't know anything about powertrain. Even if it sticks with the GV80's current top trim offering, that's still a twin turbo 3.5 V6 with 375 horsepower. So even if that was just a straight, you know, install, it's not going to be the fastest SUV, coupe or otherwise in the world,
No. But
it's still going to be plenty fun. And if they focus more on just a driver's experience with, with some crisp handling, I mean, that alone would be a good place to start. And I really dig this. And I know I've heard some people say, it's not a coupe. Well, we're talking in terms of the overall styling, you know, kind of that sloping rear roof that has a coupe theme to it. If you really want to get specific on vehicle definitions, doors technically have nothing to do with whether something is a coupe or a sedan, but I think that's a podcast for another time.
You saw me roll my eyes.
I did. And I know that I can feel the ramblers out there in internet land. Just the opinions are ready to flow.
The coupe SUV is such a bizarre segment. Like it was kind of I don't know who did it first. If it was BMW or Mercedes,
I think it was Mercedes.
Okay. It's just such a bizarre segment that we're going to take something. We're going to take an SUV, which in theory means sport utility vehicle, and we're going to take the utility out of that. And I get it from a styling point of view. You know, I am a huge fan of people should be able to buy whatever they want to buy, and vehicles can fit within whatever niche they should fit into. But this one has just always boggled my mind, where I haven't understood what the appeal is. Like, if you wanted this type of vehicle, why aren't you just buying a, you know, to, not that it exists, you know, a CLS. Why aren't you just buying a sedan with an interesting roof line versus this? It's just always interesting to me.
Well, we'll go on a quick little side ramble here, and Anthony, you're gonna have to chime in. You're gonna have to chime in on this too, buddy. No, nobody is escaping this rabbit hole, man. They wanted their performance vehicles first to just be two-door, sleek, really low to the ground. Yep. And then you'd get in them and you realize, oh, every now and again, I'd like to have somebody in the back seat and it sucks to get back there. So now we'll make the cool, sporty thing with a four-door. We'll call it a sports sedan. But, oh, how can you have a sports sedan? You know, it's not the same thing, but it kind of is. And it's slammed to the ground and it's lowered. And then you drive around for a while and you think, my back kind of hurts. This thing doesn't ride very well. I like to be a little bit more comfortable. I'd like to not lose my front bumper every time I go over a speed bump. So, okay, well, now we'll raise it up a little bit, but we can't call this a sedan anymore because now we have ground clearance. What has ground clearance? Something off-road, an SUV. Okay, so we'll call it a sport utility vehicle coupe. And now you're getting your performance that rides a little bit better, that you can take over speed bumps, that people can fit into the back. Oh, but man, I really like golfing. I can't put golf clubs in my little two-seat roadster.
I'm done.
So what do we have? The one size fits all vehicle. And for somebody looking for just one vehicle, having something that one size fits all can be pretty convenient.
I can't fight you there. I would have arguments. I could make arguments, but I understand what you're saying is that people want everything. People don't want to compromise when it comes to a vehicle. You know, some people are willing to compromise. Certainly. That's why people buy Miatas. I only say that because our boss owns a Miata or, you know, something like that, that there are, you know, some people are willing to make that compromise. Some people aren't. And that's, you know, what this is there for. So, yeah, I can't fight you there. But we should move on.
That's my little tangent. Well, I've got to hear what Anthony has to say. Like I said, nobody's escaping the rabbit hole, man.
I'll keep it short, but I mean, people like what they like, and I think a lot of it has to do with people don't want to look like other people. So if everything's boxy, you know, this sleeker thing gives people a choice to be different. Whether that's, you know, makes a segment legitimate or not, doesn't really matter if they sell.
No, I'm not saying it's illegitimate. It is legitimate because they do sell. How many X6s or, you know, GLE coupes or, you know, whatever it is.
I guess legitimate might have been too strong a word, but like the mystery around it, I think it's just more of like styling and people wanting style.
Sure. Okie doke.
Well, what do you think? Email us podcast@motorone.com. I got to get the plug in there.
Or comment. Come on, people.
You can comment right now, or you could always comment after the fact. The video will be up at YouTube.
Tell me about Big Dumb Idiot. I'm fine with that.
The video stays up on Facebook. Comment. Let us know what your thoughts are on this topic, on all of the topics. We do still get email. Actually, can we take a little bit of an intermission just for a moment? Because we do have a comment that I would like to address that came in from last week's podcast.
Okay, I think I might have missed this, so this might be a surprise to me.
Well, let me bring this up because this was last week when we were talking with Brad Hansen. Mm-hmm. We had a really great chat. That podcast, if you missed it last week, again, you can go to Motor One on YouTube. It's still there. It'll always be there. That was an hour and a half podcast, man. That was an epic ramble. So thanks to everybody for sticking around on that one. We had a commenter, and I apologize if I get your name wrong here because I can't pronounce crap.
Okay.
GL tokens 06. That's what we're going to go with here. We were talking about the Camaro and the fact that the Camaro is finally officially being dropped. And we had a really good conversation, if you recall, about maybe Corvette taking Camaro's buyers because people basically could step up.
Top Corvettes were stealing kind of the entry level Corvette
The top Camaros were kind of stealing or the base Corvettes were stealing some of the Camaro buyers.
Yes.
So here's a comment in response to that. I just can't get behind the idea that people are cross-shopping the Camaro and C8 Corvette, possibly the ZL1 range of the spectrum, but you can't tell me that volume sales of four-cylinder Camaros are being consumed by the C8. And I think that's a really stout point, because you can jump into an entry-level Camaro. I think they're still under 30.
Maybe barely. I'll look.
You know, I mean, right around barely. That range. And yeah, that you're exactly right. That's half the price of the lowest level C8. And I mean, if you, I'm jumping back
for the Camaro to start.
It's 26. So 26, yeah, I mean, that's, and honestly, that car with a four cylinder, it's still 0 to 60 in what, like 5 some seconds. That's not slow. I mean, we've gotten so jaded where we hear 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. And it's like, you get into a car that can do that in 5 seconds. It's still not slow. You step on the gas, the tires will still light up. You'll still go sideways. Take it from two Mustang guys on this podcast. You can hit crowds like nothing. And it's not just Mustangs. It's
you don't need Camaros. A lot of power to do that.
It's Camaros too. So that's a very good point. Comment goes on. The Camaro has had an identity crisis for a long time. It became the car of Bumblebee instead of the car of old school muscle, and the sales reflect the people who want the boy racer look of the Camaro. The Challenger looks straight out of the 70s, and the Mustang is a mixture of old and new. As a relatively young 34 Mustang owner, the Camaro is not a car that I would want to pull up to an interview in. The other nail in the coffin for the Camaro is that all that track prowess inflated the cost of the SS models higher than the V8 equivalents from Ford, Dodge for a time. I see tons of LT1s telling me pricing was a factor as well. Of course, the LT1 is your V8 Camaro. That's, you still get the V8 punch, but you don't get all of the other features that you get with the SS. Mm-hmm. All in all, the Camaro was an incredible car that moved too far from its buyers. The sales numbers of the Challenger, Charger, and the Mustang prove that in spades. GL Token Spa 06. I'm so sorry. I know I've butchered that name, but thank you so much. This is a great comment. This is what we really enjoy from the ramblers out there that listen. If you have comments, if you have opinions, ideas, comment, email us podcastmotor1.com. We love to read them here on the show. Mm-hmm. And I think these are some terrific points. I hadn't even considered really the whole Bumblebee Transformers aspect, you know?
Sure.
And maybe there's something there. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think there's a little bit of something there. It's just, you know, historically, you know, the Mustang has always kind of been the pony car. Like if mm-hmm. if you had to write down an answer on a test, what is a pony car? You would write down the Mustang. And the Camaro has been sometimes better than the Mustang in terms of specs, in terms of styling, in terms of whatever, but it's just always had to kind of keep up with that. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's really complicated. I don't know that I agree. I think Brad made a really, really good point that a lot of people out there who have the money to buy a performance car are more willing to maybe stretch into a Camaro rather than buying a super high spec, or I'm sorry, stretch into a Corvette rather than buying a high spec Camaro. You know, if I had the money and I had to buy a performance car and I got to pick between one or the other, I feel like I'm going to go with the Corvette 9 times out of 10, because regardless of what you say, it's a Corvette.
Mm-hmm.
So
Anthony, you own a newer Mustang. My Mustang is a little bit older. I mean, what do you think about this?
I think there's some validity to like the Camaro having identity crisis compared to the Mustang and the Challenger, because there was a few years ago when they redesigned it and it didn't go over well, and they had to quickly redesign it. Mm-hmm. I think right now they still offer it with three engines, right? The four cylinder, the V6, and the V8.
The 4.6 and the 8, I believe, are all still there. Yeah.
You know, so it feels like it's kind of languished within Chevy compared to how advanced the Corvette has become over the last, and in the same time period, you know, how much mm-hmm. innovation has been put into that. And yet the Camaro, well, I mean, you can't do as much with it because of where the market and its segment feels like it's kind of been maybe put on the back burner.
Oh yeah, I mean, when you consider the past couple of years, if you think about Chevrolet performance, Corvette. I mean, C8 has just been everywhere. But that doesn't mean that Chevrolet couldn't have done some more special editions with the Camaro. I mean, taking a note from Dodge, creating all kinds of special edition Challengers, right? But at the same token, I mean, I still get a lot of old classic first generation Camaro vibe from the current car. I mean, I think it still has the look. So, I mean, I'm not sure that argument holds up for me quite as well as just trying to identify maybe with more of the boy racer crowd. I don't know. It's a very interesting point. But love having talk like this. Thank you so much for commenting. Podcast at motor1.com, email, and then comment also on our videos, on the social posts. We love to hear from you. And thank you for that little segue into comment land. We'll read these as we get them. And for now, what do we have next on New York?
So I know we're getting a touch tight on time. So I'm going to go ahead and throw up the Kia EV9 here. Mm-hmm. But for anyone who is a frequent Rambling About Cars listener, we have talked about this vehicle in the past. It kind of debuted and then it debuted again and things like that. So I think we're going to kind of keep this one on the quicker side of things. But I will go ahead and throw that up because the North American version of the EV9 debuted in New York.
And it's 99.99% identical to the versions that have debuted globally.
Yes.
The big difference, and I hesitate to say big, you have that little orange marker light up front on both sides for the US version.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much about it.
Yeah, but let's not be that reductive though. That is the major difference, but let's go ahead and tell the folks, I am someone who is interested in a three-row electric crossover in the United States. Here's what I can get. So, the standard battery, 76.1 kilowatt hours, and that comes with a 215 horse motor. Sorry. You can also get a 99.8 kilowatt hour battery, and that gets you either 201 horsepower, and that's just with a motor in the rear, or 379 horsepower. That's with motors at both the front and the rear. The very top version will get to 60 in 5 seconds.
That's not bad for a big three-row SUV.
No, not bad.
Keep in mind what we're talking about. I mean, this isn't the performance model. This is just their range topping what they offer right now. Three-row seating, I think, for up to 8 passengers, even 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, so 3 in the middle and then 3 in the back for 8-row seating.
Yep, it can DC fast charge at up to 230 kilowatts, and that means you can get from 10 to 80% state of charge in 25 minutes, which is pretty impressive, honestly. Like those, that means you can go, refilling with gas is obviously going to be less than 25 minutes, but that's a lot of range in that amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, where we're at right now, and I mean, we're still in the very, very early stages of electric vehicles, and this is only going to get better. So, I mean, compared to other offerings out there, it's right there. It's right there. It's I think it'll work for a lot of people, and they're going to build this in Georgia, in the United States.
They are. Yep. It will go on sale in the fourth quarter of 2023. So later on in this year. Those are kind of the headline things. Again, this is a vehicle that Smith, you and I have talked about before. We talked about the interior, the exterior, but I think it was important to mention the specs for the North American model version because, you know, it's going to vary market to market. And Anthony, do you have any thoughts on the EV9 you would want to share before we move on?
Nothing other than I think it looks phenomenal for being a large three-row SUV, which usually not my cup of tea, but if I had to drive one, that'd be on the list.
Okie doke.
I mean, yeah, give him credit for not straying too far from the concept. How many times have we seen somebody come out with a really impressive concept, really grab some attention, and then we're going to put it into production. And then here comes the production, and it's like, what happened? I really love the novel. I don't know if novel is the right word. The rotating second row where you can spin around, and the second row passengers can then face the third row. To me, that's one of those, why didn't we think of this sooner ideas? Looking forward to seeing more on this.
Yeah. I think it's, a very competitive vehicle. There aren't that many three row electric SUVs out there right now, which is kind of surprising, because you would think, Ford would have an Expedition, or, GM Chevy would have a Tahoe or something like that. But we don't have those yet. The only other one I can think of that's three row is the Tesla Model X. That's the only one that's coming to mind.
There's something else. Oh, Rivian. The Rivian R1S is three row.
That's true. But still, it's not, there aren't a lot of vehicles in this segment. And the fact that this one's a Kia, and I think there are going to be a lot of dealers out there. You're going to be able to get this, they're getting into this segment early, and I think that's worth mentioning.
No, that's a very astute point.
Okey-doke.
From the Kia, we'll move to another vehicle that we've already seen that's making its debut, its North American debut in New York, and that's going to be the 2024 Hyundai Kona. Now, they're showing up in New York with the Kona Electric, and they also have the Kona Limited and the Kona N-Line. And honestly, I don't know why we haven't seen that much of the N-Line thus far. The initial press photos just kind of showed parts of it. For the North American debut, the press photos showed a little bit more of it. But fortunately, we have awesome people on site at New York. They got some great images of the N-Line. And I highlight this just because I think the N-Line looks fantastic. I think the general Kona redesign looks good with just the thin light bar going across the top. But the N-Line has a different fascia. It's just a little bit more aggressive all around. Of course, it has a little bit more black trim. I think it's just a really good looking vehicle. Just to refresh your memory here, it's got the 2-liter four cylinder, good for 147 horsepower in just the base trim. You can also get the 1.6 turbo four. That's 195 horsepower. You can get that with an 8-speed automatic as well. The interior, it's got the dual 12.3-inch displays now combined into one big screen that has a little bit of a curve to it. So a nice big revamp on the inside and the outside. I was trying to see if there were any specific differences between the North American model and the global model that we've already seen. The only thing I have, and I want to stress that I don't know if this is just differences in interpretation or if there's something else going on here. The Kona Electric, the US version, 164.8 kilowatt hour battery in the top battery.
Wait, previously 64.8. Didn't you just say 164.8? Or am I crazy?
Maybe both. I don't know. 64.8 kilowatt hour is the battery in the top trim for the Hyundai Kona Electric. Previously, we heard it was 65.4 kilowatt hour. So extremely small, but it is different. Similarly, we have an estimated range from Hyundai at 260 miles in the top trim model for the electric. Previously, we heard 304 miles, but that was a WLTP estimate, which is known to be very, very generous. The 260-mile estimate comes from Hyundai internally. So that could represent the difference there.
Yes.
The smaller battery is 48.6 kilowatt hours, and previously we were told it was 46.4, I think. So again, just very, very small differences there, whether it's just differences in interpretation of the numbers or if there's something different. It's so close. I don't really think it's going to make that much of a difference.
Those are really small little
But you're still looking at 197 horsepower in the standard model, 201 in the upgraded model. And yeah, it's kind of snazzy. I'm very excited to see one of these in person.
Sure. Yeah. The compact crossover is always kind of a hard segment to get super excited about because, mm-hmm. It's kind of the small five-door hatchback or small four-door hatchback mm-hmm. of 20 years ago that, those vehicles, it's a value play in a certain way that, an automaker has to do its absolute best to get customers there. But generally you don't see a lot of like the cutting edge tech and things like that in that segment.
I should also point out, we did learn here through the New York debut, the Kona Electric is capable of 400 volt fast charging. So it's not the quickest on the block, but that's still going to get you 10 to 80% in about 43 minutes. So yeah. I'm very interested to see what the pricing is going to be on this. We don't have that available yet. Mm-hmm. Hyundai says the pricing will be announced for all trims later in the year. The electric actually isn't going to arrive until later in the fall, so we'll have a little bit longer to wait. But the combustion models come in the summer.
Cool. So next up, and so folks, we have two more vehicles left, so almost done here. But the Volkswagen Atlas Peak Edition. And I accidentally deleted my gallery here, so I need.
No! Do you want me to describe what the Volkswagen Atlas Peak Edition is?
No, I got it. I got fast fingers. I got it up for people here.
Add some black. I mean, it's hey, of course the Atlas just had a refresh for 2024 model year, right? So I mean, we're already looking at a redesigned vehicle, and we don't mean to sound pessimistic that way. A lot of automakers jump into black appearance packages because why? People like them. They generally look good. They give a vehicle a more sporty kind of
about this kind of rugged look, weren't we?
Right. We were just talking about it with the Crosstrek. The Volkswagen Atlas, you get extra side cladding, you get roof rails, you get all terrain tires on 18 inch wheels that are what color?
Blackish.
Right, one more time with feeling. They're what color? Black. Black wheels. You get more black trim. The badges are blacked out. There's an X-shaped detail under the grill. It comes with an exclusive shade called avocado green. If you want that on the outside, it's entirely an appearance package. The powertrain, everything underneath is still the same, but it's a new package that's debuted in New York, and I'm sure there'll be buyers for it. I mean, it doesn't look bad.
Doesn't look bad at all. It's not, the changes are not significant. I think we can all agree, mm-hmm. but if you want a vaguely more rugged looking Atlas, Volkswagen's here for you. Here it is. But yeah, it is what it is. Sorry.
You see why we got these last two here at the end.
Well, no. So we said at the beginning, we prioritize these by importance. Mm-hmm. So we started with the kind of the biggest stuff. We started with the Jeep and the Ram and stuff like that. We hadn't heard the Ram specs yet. There's a lot of really important stuff there. We didn't even know the Wrangler was getting a refresh. We didn't see spy shots of that. And now we're kind of getting into...
These are valid updates here.
They're totally valid. Absolutely.
Valid updates. We see black appearance packages a lot. This one is called the Atlas Peak Edition. We don't have any information on pricing yet. I don't believe. Nope. I'm just double checking our article and I didn't see any information on pricing. Look for it coming soon. And do we want to finish with the last one? We absolutely cannot end the episode without this.
And so this is the Hyundai IONIQ 5 Disney 100 Platinum concept. This is a concept and it looks exactly like an IONIQ 5 and it's got a bunch of Disney stuff on it. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But
Bruce, there are going to be families out there that would love to get their hands on this. It's a concept right now. Hyundai has said that they will put something into limited production. Whether or not it has all the features of the concept, Hyundai isn't ready to disclose. What features does the concept have, you ask? Its front and rear lighting features have like little sparkle effects, as you do with Disney. It has Mickey Mouse inspired wheels, which I didn't really get at first, but now it's the round spokes that are the ears. You know, I can't do Mickey Mouse with a damn. Inside it has special splash screens for the digital display that shows the Disney 100 logo with little pixie dust animation. If you look up, the sunroof has quote unquote pixie dust on the sunroof, I'm guessing, or etched in there. I'm guessing it's some sort of metallic deal. They don't go into details. There are badges inside and out that identify it as a Disney vehicle. And it plays Disney music. Hyundai didn't say exactly what what Disney songs it plays, but I mean, come on. How many epic Disney musicals? Maybe I'm alone here. I get a feeling you guys are looking at me through those webcams.
I have a question here, Anthony. Between you are the only one on the show right now who has a child.
Yes.
So would your child enjoy a Disney themed vehicle?
No.
Okay, then never mind.
Well, that was shortened to the point. Yeah, it was. Yeah, no,
not enough Disney influence here for it to matter.
Okay, then. Well,
Disney owns a lot now. What is Disney? You know?
Yeah, that's
you got
true.
Marvel, you got Star Wars.
Indiana Jones movie comes out this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. I think in this case. And I should also point out, for those wondering, okay, what the hell is going on here? This year's Disney's 100th anniversary. It's a pretty big deal for their animation studio, Disney 100. So that's their whole 100th anniversary celebration. Hyundai is the only automotive sponsor involved with Disney 100. So of course they're going to have a special car, which is why there's going to be this special edition coming into production later on this year. Whether it has, I doubt it will have like the animations for the lighting for the headlights and the taillights. That just seems like a bad idea.
We might get a unique animation. That wouldn't shock me.
I think interior screen with a unique animation. I think the music. Yeah. Come on, open up your door to Circle of Life every time.
Sure.
I'm there for it. I don't even have any kids.
There are opportunities there.
Oh, right. There's so many great Disney musicals.
And like I said, we ordered these. We started the show with the biggest debut. We are ending the show with
what I feel is
the most minor debut.
We should have started with this.
Well, maybe we should, but like, you know, it's it doesn't really, it's an Ioniq 5 with some different wheels and some different animations, and that's fine. But we're kind of getting to the end of the show here, and mm-hmm. I was thinking about this beforehand, and this vehicle kind of epitomizes to me something we have had conversations about in our chats previously, and that is the death of the International Auto Show. That international auto shows are no longer really as necessary as they used to be. And for anyone who's listening right now, I'm going to explain what I mean by that. And then I'm going to let the other two guys respond. So local auto shows are still incredibly valuable. So I grew up in the Cleveland area, and at the IX Center, you could go and all of the dealers would be there, and they would have an example of every new car, and you could go and you could sit in it and you could look at it and you could do whatever. That's not what I'm talking about. I am talking about the international auto shows, your Detroit, your New York, your Geneva, your Frankfurt, things like that, where automakers go and they debut new products to the masses. And what the masses often mean is to the media. And that is sort of what's dying. And I had this whole thing I was thinking about in my head before we started. And my example of that is, Smith, it's something you and I have talked about before. And that is the Acura NSX and the new Ford GT, that they both debuted at the Detroit Auto Show during the same year. You got the production spec NSX and you got the Ford GT, or the, you know, the second gen, third gen, whatever you want to call it, Ford GT there. We had no idea the Ford was going to be there. We kind of knew the NSX was going to be there. But imagine an alternate world where Acura could set up a show, you know, invite media, show things like that. And then they would be the star of the show online for several days. We would end up doing comparisons with the new NSX versus whatever. But instead, the Ford debuted and just stole all their thunder. And, you know, it is what it is. So that's what this show is making me think of. So tell me I'm an idiot, or tell me I'm a genius, or somewhere in the middle.
I mean, you certainly have issues of making big announcements and being cannibalized by other surprises that can happen at the show. And if you're an automaker going into that, you won't know what Ford or whoever has to, you know, steal your thunder. And it seemed like it'd be a better bet and a better play financially to separate it and make sure you can get that media attention. But the question I have is, does that media attention translate into sales down the road in 6, 9, 12 months?
That's a fair point.
That's
a very fair point.
I think automakers are certainly concerned about that kind of, you know, loss of eyes. But, you know, do we know if it matters?
I don't know that it matters.
I mean, I'm pretty sure NSX outsold the GT, but they've made far fewer GTs.
Smith, am I wrong here? Tell me I'm an idiot, please.
I'm not going to call you an idiot because you're not an
idiot.
You're a stand-up guy. And you're extremely knowledgeable when it comes to automobiles. I know everybody's waiting for the punchline. I don't have a punchline. No. I'm not sure I see your example has a case for the auto show declining. If anything, it might be a case for the opposite. If without an auto show where everybody's in one venue like that, would the GT have stolen the thunder? If they did announcements separately, and seen, they still could have, because I think the big shock there was, holy crap, they built a new GT. Nobody had any idea that was coming. So you had sort of that shock value. I think that would have taken place whether you were to add an auto show or not. I think the bigger question here is, really, since I think prior to COVID,
yes,
we were starting to get some questions. Okay, how relevant are auto shows, the big ones? Because it's terrifically expensive for an automaker to go to one. Having worked on the other side, doing even minor events at smaller shows was a tremendous investment by the time you get concept vehicles or regular production vehicles shipped there. By the time you get your trade show booth, everything that you're going to set up shipped there, by the time you fly all of your people there, by the time you get all of your print work done, your paper. I mean, it's a terrific expense to present something to a person that can now be done right down the street in your own manufacturing headquarters, in your own design studio. Don't even take the damn concept out anywhere to set up a few cameras, invite a few people in, click play on the live stream. And now all of a sudden you're reaching all of those people. In fact, you might be even reaching a stronger, more targeted audience, the ones that are legitimately interested in your product versus ones that are just walking by because, you know, they want to see the other display on down the hall, and you're spending a fraction of the money.
Yeah.
I think there was discussion about that before COVID, because we were seeing some automakers like Mercedes. I remember Mercedes, I think in BMW, maybe even Audi, saying we weren't going to attend the Detroit Auto Show. Was that 2018 or 2019, somewhere around there? And I was like, yeah. Wow. That was I remember that was kind of big news. It's like, wow, they're not going to attend that. That's one of the biggest shows in the world. And then here comes COVID, where everything was shut down. More automakers stepped into the realm of, okay, we're going to hold our own events. Yep. And they realized, well, this kind of works. So what's the result? Instead of Dodge going to the New York International Auto Show to debut the new 1,025 horsepower Demon, where they have to have a press conference in between the press conference from automaker A, in between automakers. No, you know what? Let's just rent out Las Vegas Motor Speedway for the day. We'll bring in a car and a helicopter and we'll run it down the drag strip, which is where we want people to see this car anyways, right?
Or, which is what happened, was they invited Motor One, and I was the one that attended, you know, several weeks before the debut, and they had a virtual backgrounder where, you know, they didn't pay. There was no plane travel. There was no nothing. It was just, I was on my computer. I was sitting here. I was still able to ask questions. It was, but it was virtual, you know, and, you know, they did that from within their own design studio.
But all of that being said, I think there's still a place for large auto shows. I just don't think you're going to see as many. And I don't think you'll see as many significant debuts at them as we did in the past. Because it is a tremendous expense, but I think we're still going to see when there's something where an automaker really wants to make a statement. I still think an auto show is going to be valuable because people can still get that tactile experience. Then you can do your digital reveal online, still reach your targeted audience that you want. But then you're also at the auto show where the people can just come in and see the vehicle, because we know it's always at the very least a slightly different experience when you see it in person versus when you see it two-dimensionally on a screen. So
yes,
that's my take there.
Okay.
What's your take, everybody? Podcast@motorone.com. Email us. Comment on the video on YouTube that will be up after the live stream is over. We're still going to be on Facebook. We still also repost Facebook Sundays, 12:30 PM. We always repost the video so you can watch it again if you missed it. Comment, email. We love to hear back from you. We love to share it on air.
And the audio version still exists. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon,
Deezer,
iHeartRadio, Deezer, which I still don't know what Deezer is, but we're there. So
sounds cool. That's all. It sounds Deezer. Dude, I'm on Deezer.
Yeah.
that's like, I hate to pull a Clarkson, but that's like driving the Jag.
Yeah.
I'm right? We're on Deezer. Yeah. Anthony, you're going to be on Deezer now too. So thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Pleasure. Always. Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to plug, like anything either outside of work, or do you have any like personal socials you want people to know about, or you doing anything cool you just want to brag about? Like,
I think you can find my socials on my author bio page, which is my Instagram and Twitter. Nothing much exciting there. So if you want to, you can follow me, but you won't be getting any scoops.
Okay.
Course, I mean, you can get us all at motorone.com. We are the U.S. news team right here.
Yes.
We are Smith, US Bruce, Anthony. When you're going to motorone.com to catch news, you're most likely reading something from the three of us. So, Anthony, thanks much for taking the time out this evening to join us. And thank you, all the Ramblers out there, for listening as well.
Totally. Yeah. And as always, so for all of our audio or later listeners, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. We appreciate everyone who takes time out to listen to our show, because the fact that you are taking your time out to listen to us rather than some other podcast, some other videos, rather than spending time with your family, you are putting us in your ear holes somehow. That means a lot to us, because, you know, there are so many other places you could be doing that. So I just love that so much. So thank you all. Thank you all for spending time with us. And yeah, like Smith said, if you have any comments, podcast@motorone.com is the email address. Motor One on YouTube, you can comment there. Like, just search Motor One and you will find some place to comment on us. And so I appreciate it so much. So with that, we're going to be calling it an evening. So bye-bye.
We'll see you next week, everybody.